This is a recent treaty signing at Wounded Knee, South Dakota, by the United States government and leaders of the Oglala Sioux Nation. Since 1672, the United States government has signed 411 treaties with various Indian tribes. But Indians feel that many of these treaties have been broken, and it goes without saying that the frustrations and anger that built up to Wounded Knee were long overdue. The film you're about to see depicts some of the anger and frustrations that occurred at Custer, South Dakota.
About 11 months ago, before we left Pine Ridge, he said, no more Indian, no more Indian will get killed by a white man. We went to Washington, D.C. to let the white man know we are human beings. After we come back from Washington, D.C., still white men killing Indians. We're going to be in Custer to sacrifice our lives. White men made the first move. We're going to talk about getting on, and we're going to get it on there.
For a year now, those of us that have been into all the actions on AIM, we keep making these commitments, and we keep trying to tell the white man, who has no eyes and no ears, we keep trying to tell him, we want justice and sovereignty and our type of self-determination. And he continues to have no eyes, and he continues to have no ears. And I am tired.
That highway patrolmen have been alerted in case they are needed, but he said he does not expect any trouble.
McGovern has deplored the actions of Indian people protesting the kind of mistreatment that we've been receiving. That he must be on the other side of the fence. They have offered us a lifespan of 44.5 years. I think it's time, as we have said in the past 11 months, it's time that AIM and all Indian people across this country stand up, be counted, and begin to fight back and declare war on all of this mistrust, abuse, slum conditions, injustices, murder.
The AIM members are protesting the January 21st stabbing death of Wesley Charles Bad Heart Bull of Hot Springs in a fight at Buffalo Gap. A 30-year-old Custer man, Darrell Schmitz, has been charged with second-degree manslaughter in connection with that incident.
Declare war on all of those McGoverns and all of those Senate leaders, all of those Custers.
The mayor of Custer, South Dakota, Mr. Gene Reese. The American Indian Movement, from what we've been told, is planning a demonstration here in Custer. What are your plans?
We feel that these people are coming in, they're just tourists.
If I die, I want to be buried in the Pahasapa, you know, without any fanfare, and I don't want a coffin, because I'm going to pay back my Mother Earth, my mother, for all that she has given me, so that my body can once again feed her and all of the life that has helped me and mine. In Custer this morning, as you know, it's snowing outside, and it's very appropriate that Custer and the Black Hills and the snow is happening all at once. As this is how they chased down Crazy Horse and his women and children was in the snow in the wintertime, forced him to come to the reservation in starvation. This is the first time the American Indian Movement is going to take the offensive. There's a Fort Custer there. The town of Custer, the county of Custer, Hotel Custer.
All the law enforcement in the state of South Dakota has been notified and been kept aware of the situation as it progresses. And we think that we have things fairly well in hand.
We are going to prove that Nixon's speech to the world, when he said they honor their treaty commitments because of the treaty they just signed about Indochina, that those are false lies. America has been involved in Indian wars for 450 years.
Good afternoon, this is Impacto. Yo soy Manuel Aragon. This afternoon we're going to talk about Wounded Knee and what happened there, and two people who are here to discuss it with us are Mr. Dennis Banks, who is National Field Director for the American Indian Movement, and Mr. Ramon Robidoux, General Counsel for the American Indian Movement. Welcome, gentlemen, to Impacto. Mr. Banks, you were at Wounded Knee, where there was a confrontation for 71 days between the massed forces of the United States government and the Indians of Wounded Knee. Are there likely to be more Wounded Knee-type confrontations anytime soon?
I think before that this war ends that you'll see 50 more Wounded Knees happening all across this country.
You say a war. What war are you talking about?
I'm talking about the war that this government has declared against us since 1849, since the establishment of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and since the creation of the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934. These acts and policies which they have passed against the community without Indian approval has caused untold misery and murder and death to happen on the reservation against Indian people. And as long as conditions like that exist against Indian people and are condoned by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, a government agency, I consider that to be an act of war. I consider it war against all Indian people by this government.
Do you have plans right now for any other Wounded Knee type confrontations?
We have plans, of course, to straighten out all kinds of corruption on a lot of reservations. Our plans, of course, don't include, you know, any immediate physical confrontation with this government. But if the conditions call for it today, if it called for it this very hour, a Wounded Knee could happen any place in the United States, any place on the reservation.
Mr. Rubidoux, when we talk about the war in the rhetorical sense and also in the sense of confrontation between armed men, you've talked about war in another sense, a legal sense. How do you justify the use of that term in a legal sense?
We're confronted with a governmental system that has completely smothered the Indian people, smothered them so badly that even in our court system, in many cases, Indian people aren't receiving the consideration they should receive under the laws of this land. Consequently, in defending our people who are accused of crimes in connection with the Wounded Knee confrontation, we are going to enlist the aid of many volunteer attorneys throughout the country to launch a massive legal assault against the people who would deny these equal protections to us in the court system.
A little later on, we'll ask you for an address that people can write to or a phone number if they want more information. But I think you also raised the matter of jurisdiction when we were talking earlier, the matter of jurisdiction over the Indian nation's geographic territories. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Well, we feel that the treaty system, the treaties that were entered into by this government with the Indian tribes throughout the United States, were unilaterally cut off in 1871. And since that time, a succession of congressional enactments have taken away from the Indian people their right to govern themselves, have taken away many other things of monetary value, such as mineral rights, water rights, hunting and fishing rights, the rights to compensation for power lines that go across Indian lands. Many things like that were not given up in our treaties. And we maintain today that despite unilateral action by the Congress of the United States in bit by bit taking away all of our sovereignty, that we still, from an international legal standpoint, we still have the status of sovereign nations and still are entitled to these rights of self-government.
So the martial law conditions, for example, the Wounded Knee with federal marshals on the reservation, in your view, constitute what? Invasion by a foreign power into your national territory, or what?
You could look at it that way. We feel that the actions of the federal forces are not authorized, that they're illegal, and that they're void, and that they have no business coming on our reservation and brutalizing our people who are merely protecting their personal and property rights.
Mr. Banks, is this a situation in which the contestant or the party with the greater power of armed forces is going to prevail? Is there any way? How can you possibly hope to fight the massed power of the United States government with all of its with all of its armed forces and all of its capability to mobilize force against you if it comes to that? How are you going to fight that?
Well, of course, militarily, we couldn't last more than 1 second against this government in terms of what they used against us at Wounded Knee. They used tanks, 50 caliber machine guns. They used hand grenades. They used gas. Everything that constitutes, and war material that they used against us. But we're going to have to approach this, you know, in a shotgun approach, one using, of course, worldwide approach in gaining worldwide attention by trying to create an international treaty tribunal that would push, you know, our cases to the world court. The other, of course, is to question the jurisdiction of that this government, the United States government, on the reservations of the United States. Mm-hmm. I think that a clear example of how they're using the double system or the dual system of justice against us is a crime whereby Indians, I'm a member of the Chippewa Nation. You know, if I crossed the border and went to Mexico to live, I would become an alien to the United States government. You know, whereby I wouldn't become an alien to the Chippewa Nation. I would still be a member of the Chippewa tribe in Minnesota or in Wisconsin or wherever it's at. And you know, we have to answer some of these questions of jurisdiction and question the immigration laws here in the United States as they relate to Indian people. Mm-hmm. And we have to, you know, if Indian people began to question the immigration laws themselves, you know, we would certainly be booting a lot of people out of this country who we felt were aliens.
And, you know, who are the aliens in this country?
Every non-Indian that's in this country.
That's a rhetorical question almost. Let me ask you, was Wounded Knee a planned situation or was it spontaneous or something that happened because of the conditions?
Wounded Knee happened, the February 27th action, you know, what wasn't spontaneous. There was a series of events which, you know, I can't go back 6 months or 1 year mm-hmm. or 5 years and began to find out, you know, where it started. But Wounded Knee began, you know, in 1934 with the Indian Reorganization Act, which gave and took the control of the self-government away from the chiefs, the traditional chiefs and headsmen, and gave them to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You know, that was the beginning of Wounded Knee. The creation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs itself was the beginning of Wounded Knee in 1849. You know, I can't say where Wounded Knee began. It began in 1890 when federal troops massacred Indian people, you know, at Wounded Knee. You know, all of these things led up to the February 27th action. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying that Wounded Knee can happen on any reservation right now, because the conditions, as a matter of fact, the conditions at Wounded Knee have gotten worse. You know, they've declared martial law on the reservation. United States marshals are on the reservation. FBI agents are on the reservation. You know, we have to begin to question these people, mm-hmm. you know, and their real intent, because they're trying to destroy the Oglala Sioux Civil Rights Organization from impeaching that president. Mm-hmm. You know, the same kind of problem that what's going across in this government today. You know, they're trying to they found grounds to impeach President Nixon. We have found grounds to impeach, you know, President Wilson. Mm-hmm. You know, but nobody is going to do it, you know, because this government is using all of its material strength, all of its technical strength to provide or to prevent any kind of impeachment mm-hmm. proceedings from happening. That's what's happening on Wounded Knee. That's what's happening on all across this every reservation.
Do you think that the confrontation of Wounded Knee was a mistake, looking back on it now?
I think it was a mistake that we ended it.
You'd be for have continued that confrontation?
Because this government did not live up to the treaty that they signed May 5th or May 8th or March 8th. The same trick that they used on our chiefs back in, since they began signing the treaties. They used that same trick at Wounded Knee. And we laid down our weapons, we surrendered, and they 2 hours after the treaty was signed, they began to violate their own treaty. They began to use dictatorial terms, they began to imprison our people, they began to harass us on the reservation, and that continues today. And that same, this government, you know, is using the same trick. It used it at Wounded Knee, it'll use it again tomorrow. That's why I'm saying that Wounded Knee can happen again tomorrow or today, right this very hour.
Mr. Rubidoux, is there any way to enforce the treaty that was recently signed ending the confrontation of Wounded Knee? Is there any way that you can get some equity under that treaty?
I think the only way that we're going to enforce those treaty provisions and receive any justice under them is for world opinion and also the opinion of the people of the United States that will force this government to live up to its obligations. Now, that doesn't seem like a very immediate solution. However, it's really all we have. For years, the government has hidden from the American people its oppression and stealing from Indian people, and the fact that 90% of the tax dollars go to bureaucrats. They live in the fine houses, they drive the fine cars, and the great majority of our Indian people are living in abject poverty.
You're talking about the people who work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, for example.
That's right.
Yes, now, before Wounded Knee, there was another incident, a major incident, in Custer, South Dakota, and we have some film of that, and I think we'd like to show that now.
Fine.
That the manslaughter charges against a white man arrested after an Indian was stabbed to death should be changed to murder. Fighting erupted when officials refused.
It was in the courthouse the police officers were tossing two gas bombs out of the building.
Come on in!
Indians were bloodied during the fighting inside the Custer County Courthouse.
It is better to die than to be in slavery and to be killed at the whim of the white man. And that's, you know, at the point where I'm at.
When finally driven back into the streets, the Indians then demolished two patrol cars. After a short stalemate, both sides brandishing rifles, Indians hurled incendiary bombs into the courthouse. The one-story Chamber of Commerce was also burned to the ground.
One AIM member, Russell Means, was apparently arrested by police behind the courthouse shortly after the fire broke out in the front of the building.
Come with me. You have the right to be silent. You may say so, you have the right to be attorney. You may have to be you to be questioned. You understand that rule?
The Indians called this their victories, even though battered and bloodied at the Custer showdown. 27 followers were in jail, charged with riot and arson. The leader of the American Indian movement, Dennis Banks, said the fighting at Custer was aimed at stopping all white injustices to Indians.
Today, our finest hour. What's so important is that February 6th is going to last a long time. I think those people will think twice before they stab another Indian.
Mr. Banks, you've said that one of the ways in which you can combat the forces of the United States government is by gaining some broad support in the American people and in the wider community. Do you feel that the events of Custer and the events of Wounded Knee have strengthened your case, have gotten you more sympathy and more support than you had before these events took place in the broader population? What has been your feeling about this? What reaction have you
had? I think that the general response that we got from the American public is an indication that that they also are dissatisfied with the conditions that face Indian people on the reservation, and it's to those people that we're appealing for general help. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to.
What kind of help do you need? Now, in very specific terms, have you some ideas about what you need? Perhaps.
Well, we're gonna. We have over 200 people that are under indictment by the government, and we've raised $500,000 for the bail. I'm out on bail myself for $105,000, and I'm facing 105 years. And you know that's ironic because the average lifespan of an Indian is only 44.5 years. And you know they're only going to squeeze about another 3 years out of me, and you know we're going to have to need another $1 million for legal defense, and this is the kind of support you know we're asking for the American public to help us you know have our day in court, whether it's in a federal court or whether it's in a world court. You know, we've got to have that day.
When are these trials likely to come up? When are they likely to begin? Any idea, Mr. Rubido?
I think it'll be several months, perhaps even a year, before these cases are tried. We have a great number of preliminary motions that are now being presented and argued in court. And of course, we don't expect that those motions are going to receive very favorable consideration, but if they're not, we're going to appeal those to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. We plan on giving these Indians their rights under this law, even though the government is doing everything it can to keep these people from being properly represented and properly heard in the court system of this land.
Now, if some of our viewers want to help, or if they want to get more information, is there someplace they can reach you? Can they write someplace, or can they call someplace to get more information?
Yes, we've established a legal office in Rapid City, South Dakota. It's called the Wounded Knee Legal Defense Fund, Box 147, Rapid City, South Dakota, area code 57701. And there, the funds that come in...
That's a zip code, 57701?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. These funds are deposited in an account that's strictly controlled, books are kept, and a complete accounting is made of all funds that are contributed for this legal defense.
So you need funds. How about volunteer help? Do you need volunteers, or is it mainly money that you're after right at this
point? It's mainly money, although we do need specialized help. We need people who are adept at trial work and investigation work, and people who possess special skills in the criminal defense field.
But you don't need people to come in and help you organize. You've got your own skilled organizer, is that right? Your own leadership in the Indian community.
Right. Well, also, I mentioned earlier, too, that the conditions on the reservation, particularly at Pine Ridge, had been getting worse. And last week, we established a grocery line from Rapid City to Wounded Knee, because there's still 62 families that are being denied groceries and the credit that they enjoyed prior to the Wounded Knee situation.
You mean they can't buy groceries on credit?
Right. They're, you know, the tribal government has, or the tribal president has taken steps to have the 62 families credit cut off on the reservation and the surrounding towns. Mm-hmm. And we've had to, you know, it's running us about $300 a day now for groceries, you know, to supply these 62 families.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rubido, are you thinking of taking this case to the United Nations?
That's certainly a possibility. It would be a terrible thing if we had to go to get the help that we want to the United Nations or to foreign countries. But we need help very badly, and we'll do anything we can to get justice for our Indian people.
Have you contacted any friendly foreign governments at this point who might help you?
Not as yet.
What about other groups within the United States? Do you feel that the Chicano community, for example, is a potential ally, or the black community, are they potential allies?
Certainly.
Other interest groups?
You know, that's one of the reasons why we're out here in this area, is to generate support from other ethnic groups because of the tremendous voting power that they have. You know, they enjoy a bigger block of voting than American Indians have because they... There's only about 700,000 Indians in the United States, and we're out here to hopefully generate a large coalition to between Chicanos, between blacks, and between Asians, mm-hmm. to bring about this massive worldwide and nationwide support that we need.
There's 700,000 Indians right now. How many were there when the white man came to this continent?
About a million.
What would you estimate? About a million. We have a little bit over a minute left, Mr. Banks, and I think it would be very appropriate if you could make a closing remark to our viewers about the urgency of the situation for the Indian people and what you think ought to happen. And you have about a minute, and kind of wrap it up with that.
Well, I think that the viewers, you know, should concentrate their efforts towards contacting senators and the lawmakers of this country to ask them to re-examine these treaties and to re-study them in hopes that Indian people can reopen the treaties that we have signed with this country. Reopen the treaties so that we might have self-government on the reservation. Reopen the treaties so that if the commitments are fulfilled, you know, you won't find Indian people committing suicide on the reservation. You wouldn't find people being driven to alcohol, and you wouldn't find an early death rate. And these are the conditions that face us daily on the reservations. If the lawmakers are strongly urged to reopen some of these treaties, I'm sure that it'll do a great service to Indian people all across this country.
Mr. Rubidoux, thank you very much for coming here this afternoon. I hope our viewers will respond to your request for help. Certainly, it's long overdue. Mr. Banks, I can only wish you the best in your fight for a fair trial, and we will do what we can to make sure that you get at least the trial that you deserve, a fair one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again next Sunday. Good afternoon.
In 1943, when the Americans gained air and sea command in the Pacific, the Japanese daringly rescued 5,200 of their men from Kiska Island. The story is told Friday night at 9.